Ramadan is a holy month on the Muslim calendar. It's known as the month of fasting. Those who observe don't eat or drink anything from dawn until dusk. Well, in Gaza right now, there are scores of people not eating even after the sun goes down. But it's not by choice.
UN experts have accused Israeli leaders of, quote, intentionally starving the Palestinian people in Gaza. With over 500,000, according to the UN's World Food Programme, now at risk of starvation.
This man says the food markets are barren. No dates, no milk, nothing. The Palestinian Health Ministry said on Sunday that at least 25 people have died from malnutrition or dehydration. It's hard to imagine a more desperate situation. That is, unless a major military ground operation was around the corner. That is what this Ramadan looks like. But don't tell that to some people on the other side of the border.
They're starving to death.
They are not starving.
They are starving to death.
You know what? If they are starving to death, give us back, give the hostages back.
Today, why some Israelis don't want to see any aid get into Gaza, and what President Joe Biden considers a red line. From CNN, this is Tug of War. I'm David Rind. Clarissa Ward is CNN's chief international correspondent. She's in Jerusalem for us. So, Clarissa, Ramadan is underway. There is still no ceasefire deal. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said if those two things coincided, the IDF would push into Rafah. So, is that push happening?
From what we are seeing and hearing on the ground and from what the politicians geopolitically are saying, it doesn't appear that an actual Rafah offensive is imminent. And in fact, the U.S. has said from their observations, they don't see the preparations being made that would need to be undertaken in order to facilitate that kind of an operation. Now, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu just reiterated in the last couple of days that it will happen, but it doesn't seem that it's happening right at this moment. At the same time, there are strikes ongoing, but a large-scale offensive does not appear to be starting imminently.
Can you unpack this idea of red lines? Because we heard President Biden on MSNBC the other day kind of talk about this, but I guess I'm wondering if 30,000 dead Palestinians and all this aid not coming in isn't a red line, like what would be?
President Biden has said that Rafah, an offensive on Rafah, would be a red line and that 30,000 more Palestinians cannot die. At the same time, he said that this doesn't change the fact that he is loyal to Israel and he will stand with Israel.
The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence.
And I think that many people will say President Biden's comments should be understood in the context of U.S. politics as well. And coming after the Michigan primary and so many voters voting uncommitted. At the same time, Prime Minister Netanyahu is saying he has his own red line. And that red line is that October 7th doesn't happen again. And that can only be ensured or guaranteed by finishing this fight with Hamas, which the IDF says can only happen if Rafah is finally cleared.
Look, we have our agreements on the basic goals, but we also have disagreements on how to achieve them. Ultimately, it's Israel that has to decide. Our neck is on the line.
And so at the end of the day, the whole publicly support and privately pressure policy that had been the policy of the administration really up until recent weeks and months has now transformed into a more overt pressure policy on Israel.
It's all kind of public now.
Exactly.
And another thing the Biden administration has kind of been struggling to convince Israel to do is to open up more aid crossings as hunger really sets in within Gaza. So what have they kind of done to try to get around that?
They've put a lot of pressure on Israel to try to open up a border crossing in the north. A couple of weeks ago, it seemed like the Israelis were going to try or they said they made a commitment to try to open up that crossing. It hasn't happened. We don't know the backstory as to why it hasn't happened. There may be operational concerns, but another concern that perhaps is discussed less is where the headspace of the Israeli public is at. And actually, according to a recent poll, 68% of Jewish Israelis oppose international aid being transferred into Gaza.
Wow.
And we saw this for ourselves when we went to a protest at the Kerem Shalom border crossing where the aid that is going in is going through now.
Under international law, it's Israel's obligation to make sure that the ordinary citizens of Gaza don't starve to death. And right now they are starving to death.
Hamas is making it very difficult because Hamas is not allowing this to arrive.
The hostages
they're not holding
well.
It. They're not, not receiving it.
But
we will do it. I'm telling you here and now. If we knew it's getting to children of Gaza, we would do it. This does not arrive at their doorstep. This arrives into the tunnels of Hamas.
The idea that many Israelis have is that firstly, all of this aid goes to Hamas, even though there is not evidence to substantiate the idea that all of this aid is indeed going to Hamas, but also that it gives them more leverage to get the hostages back if they deny food and drink and medical aid. We challenge them with international law that dictates an occupying power has an obligation to look after the civilian population. But that is not something that really resonates a lot here.
They should get only the minimum calories required to survive.
They're starving to death.
They are not starving.
They are starving
they
to
are,
death.
You know what? If they are starving to death, give us back, give the hostages back. No a single loaf of bread should go there till our hostages are coming back.
To many people in the world, listening to what you're saying and what you're protesting for, it sounds like A, contravention of international law, and B, incredibly callous in the face of an epic humanitarian catastrophe, in the face of children starving to death. People can't understand why anyone in their right mind would advocate for stopping aid.
Hamas has no fair play. Hamas has no rules. Hamas is holding civilians. You know, even if there is a humanitarian crisis, and there is not, even if there is, it's my right and my duty to prioritize the life of Kfir Bibas, a one-year-old baby that is there, over any Gazan baby.
I want to stress that Israel is not a monolith.
Yeah.
There are many different types of thinking here, and we have also seen protests out in the streets on a regular basis from people who believe that more aid needs to be getting into Gaza, that there needs to be a ceasefire in order for the hostages to be released. So there is a diversity of opinion, but certainly Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu understands that opening up more border crossings, allowing more aid into Gaza, and delaying an offensive in Rafah, that could be used by some of his detractors, and it could be used even by some of his supporters against him, because it's not necessarily an idea that's popular with the Israeli public.
Back with Clarissa in just a bit. Welcome back to Tug of War and my conversation with CNN's Clarissa Ward. When you have people like those protesters that you met even denying the fact that there is a humanitarian crisis at all, like, it's kind of mind-boggling to think about, but where does that come from? Is that grief? Is that just nationalism caught up in the war? Like, what is that?
I think a lot of it is good old-fashioned misinformation.
Hmm.
There is a broad swath of the population who are getting their news from their Telegram channels or their Instagram accounts, and they are being fed this line about so-called Pallywood, which is a play on the word Hollywood and Palestinians, and basically propagates this idea that most of the videos that you're seeing from Gaza that show the horrifying humanitarian catastrophe and the violence and the strikes are in fact highly produced videos put together by actors. Now, obviously, we know that that's simply not based in fact, but it resonates, again, with a lot of people here. And so they believe that the international community is being hoodwinked into believing that things are worse on the ground than they actually are. I do also think that you touched on something really important, though, which is that profound epigenetic Holocaust trauma was triggered by October 7th. Mm. And that has had a seismic effect on Israeli society, which to anyone in the U.S. who lived through 9/11 should not come as a huge surprise, because we experienced something similar in the aftermath of 9/11 ourselves. And even President Biden, in his earliest speeches, warned Israel about making the same mistakes that the U.S. did after 9/11. Mm.
And we just learned that an Israeli-American hostage was confirmed dead in Gaza, killed on October 7th. So that grief just kind of continues. So these options then to get the aid into Gaza, which is desperately needed, whether it be this pier that the U.S. is building or a maritime corridor, like, is any of that going to make a difference?
The problem is the issue of time. The pier, by the U.S.'s own admission, could take 30 to 60 days to construct. So you're talking potentially more than a month, 6 weeks, even 2 months.
Wow.
It's not clear at this stage that the children of northern Gaza in particular have weeks, let alone a month. So that is the real challenge on that front. We have also seen efforts from the United Arab Emirates to try to bring in aid by ship. One of the important things to understand here is that even if you could get 300 trucks of aid a day into Gaza, which is roughly what the WFP says they would need to stave off famine, those trucks can't get from southern Gaza, from Rafah, to northern Gaza because of a multitude of reasons, because the roads have largely been destroyed, because of criminal activity, because of looting. And so the possibility with some kind of a maritime corridor was that you would make it easier to get aid into northern Gaza. So yes, that could have some kind of a positive impact, but you will not find a single aid worker, and believe me, we have talked to dozens over the past couple of weeks, who will not tell you that all of this is, in their words, a distraction from the very clear and obvious reality to humanitarian organizations that do this work on a regular basis, which is that on the ground, free, unfettered access of movement is the best way to effectively distribute aid. That can really only be done when there is some kind of a ceasefire in place. And that's why you continue to see these calls for at least a temporary ceasefire that would allow some of that desperately needed aid to get in.
Clarissa, thank you.
Thank you so much, David.
Tug of War is a production of CNN Audio. This episode was produced by Paolo Ortiz and me, David Rind. Our senior producer is Haley Thomas. Dan DeZula is our technical director, and Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of CNN Audio. We get support from Alex Manisseri, Robert Mathers, John Dianora, Lenny Steinhardt, James Andres, Nicole Pesaru, and Lisa Namorow. Special thanks to Caroline Patterson, Brent Swales, and Katie Hinman. We'll be back on Friday. Talk to you then.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
Lately, we have been paying attention to a very different virus, bird flu, which is caused by the H5N1 virus. If you start to hear that it's circulating in pigs, that would be a concern.
That means I would go from sleeping with one eye open to one and a half eyes open. Yeah, that would make me very concerned.
Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.